Hello, I'm Mallory Rubin.
And I'm Van Lathan.
Check out the Ringerverse podcast from The Ringer for all things superhero movies, nerd culture, and fandom entertainment.
We have instant reviews and fun takes on all the latest news and more, available now on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Are you recording now?
Recording now? There we go. Already.
Listen.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast and Ringer FC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all right, thanks, man. How are you?
Very well indeed. Protecting my energy on this cold, wet day.
Yeah, where the hell, man? Where's the sun gone?
Certainly not
where
here.
Where's the sun gone? You have a good weekend?
Very good indeed. Very quiet one. Just watched a lot of football and ate a lot of Ugandan food.
Wow.
Whose recipes I shall not disclose.
Someone's at home. Have you watched Moon Knight yet?
I have. I loved it.
I enjoyed it. It was a little bit confusing initially. And also, I'm not sure what was more confusing, initially trying to figure out what was real and what wasn't, or Oscar Isaac's English accent.
See, that's one of my favourite things about it.
Oh,
because
I'm going to jog on. Later, skaters.
All right, then.
I was like, this isn't written by an English person.
Dick Van Dyke. Actually, no, here's the genius of it. The genius of Oscar Isaac's like OTT Cockney accent is that it places the series firmly in the absurd. So you're ready for anything. That is the dramatic technique that it works really well.
Do you think that's a deliberate thing? Like,
absolutely.
Reduce all expectations. It's like Arsenal losing to Brentford on the opening day of the season.
No.
Bring the expectation level to zero, right? And then build.
I think there's an inherent comedy in it. I think it's deadpan comedy. Do you know the other thing I mentioned as well? Because there's a moment where he goes into Tottenham Court. There's a thing they do in American series where they go into tube stations in the UK and they're obviously not those tube stations.
Oh, yeah.
And they do it with Tottenham Court Road. And I'm like, this is obviously a massive, like, this is a massive deadpan joke. Someone is having so much fun. But yeah, I'm really, really enjoying this series. Yeah.
Nice. Obviously, if you want to hear some in-depth chat about Moon Knight
from actual experts,
go and listen to
Ringerverse. Yeah,
the Midnight Boys on the Ringerverse podcast. Search for it on Spotify.
It's amazing.
Good lads.
Got to try and barge on
there, haven't you?
No, I've got to try and get my way back. I've fallen off the radar.
See, I'm not nerdy enough to get on that shit.
Oh, please! Since the man on the F1 podcast twice. Don't hide.
Twice. Yeah, well, that's not cool, nerdy, is it?
Nerds aren't cool.
I tell you what,
they're having a moment. Nerds are having a moment, but nerds are not cool.
F1 reply, guys. Oof. They are.
Serious.
They are faster out of the blocks than F1 cars at the start of the grid, I tell you. Good grief.
Start of 2022, Ryan, I just want a quiet life. Ryan in March 2022, oh, I'll do two F1 podcasts with the biggest reply guys in sport.
I'm retiring. I've had enough. I've just, the things I've seen, Musa, you wouldn't believe. Anyway, let's do some admin quick. We hope everyone's staying safe and well. We hope you're getting vaccinated if you can.
Getting that boost if you can.
Ramadan Mubarak to anyone who's observing this month. Louis van Gaal was on Dutch TV, revealed he's suffering from prostate cancer. So get well soon, Louis. we hope you come through that all good. Number of people who are very close to me have had prostate cancer over the last few years, and luckily they all came through. So fingers crossed for Louis as well.
Absolutely.
Righty's House this week will just be Ian and myself. We're going to be talking about Palace against Arsenal, and we're going to give a couple of bunches of flowers out. One of them will probably be for Chloe Kelly, who made her return this weekend, and also Calvin Phillips. So we'll save the Super League stuff for, I'll mention that on Righty's House when we do the Chloe Kelly.
My favourite City stuff. Player. My favourite City player.
She's back. All right, so today we're going to touch on a couple of Premier League games, and we'll touch on a couple of other games around Europe, some goals, some derbies. So let's get into it after this.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
All right, man, should we begin in the Premier League?
Let's do it. Start there.
We need to talk about Brentford.
We have to.
I think Thomas Frank said this was their biggest result of the season, and it is hard to argue with that, going to the home of the European and world champions and coming away from there with a 4-1 win after being a goal down.
That has been an impressive result any time in the last 20 years.
Yeah, it has. It really has. Antonio Rudiger opened the scoring for Chelsea. And what it said on Match of the Day that this was Chelsea's first long-range goal in the Premier League since like 2007 or something.
What? No.
His celebration was incredible, by the way.
That man is having the most fun in the Premier League.
And then he's going to bounce.
But actually, no, but the fact he scored, it's an astonishing goal, but the fact he scored it said a lot about the type of shot-making Chelsea were reduced to by the quality of what Brentford were doing.
Mm.
You know, this is the thing about Brentford. We'll talk about Christian Eriksen in a moment, but this was a team that absolutely needed a fresh injection of something, because yeah, they had the kind of the Sheffield United problem, extremely well organised and so good at the plan A. The plan A was a thing that, you know, could keep them up. But then obviously as time went on and people worked out what they were doing, and crucially, I think squad size and fatigue came in. I don't want to say, it's not entirely fair to say that Brentford were worked out, but more that, you know, fatigue kicking in, the style of play, the players, high energy. And the signing of Christian Eriksen coming along at a point where it was perfect for both club and player, because it gives them that different
Absolutely.
Option.
Absolutely.
It's one of those ones that we talk so often about fit and the timing of his intervention. It then allows Brentford to play with a change of tempo and to release different types of attackers. It takes the playmaking burden off certain players, takes the goal scoring burden off certain players because he's now an extra finisher. That's the thing. So knowing now that he can arrive in the box allows Ivan Toney to pull wide and showcase other parts of his game. So it's just a win-win for everybody. Really, really beautiful performance from Brentford, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw in this game all the reasons why they signed Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
It was that pass he had in the first half where he just drops in deep and he kind of hits it on the half volley left foot.
God.
Into the right-hand channel.
Yes.
And it's just the most perfectly weighted pass. It looks so easy. That's what I love about Christian Eriksen. Where he drops into these little pockets and he executes passes that look so simple, but actually technically, they're really, really hard to do. And he just knits. This is probably going to be quite basic analysis of Christian Eriksen because
a lot of
it is so tied up in the emotional aspect of what he's been through over the last year
though,
and what he's come through. But also it's not like the fact that he is just back on a football pitch. He's back on a football pitch and completely knitting together a side that needed a player exactly
like him. It's incredible.
Like
him. I can't emphasize how amazing this is. You have in a 3-5-2, right? So you have the defensive solidity, you have the counter punching, you have Brentford's ability to basically like lock off that defense like chainmail, right? You're reducing Chelsea to playing in these horrible, useless pockets. They can't build up passing tempo because there's barriers everywhere. And you've got Eriksen as the outball. That's unbelievable. That's the best quality outball you have at that level of football. And this is not disrespectful to Brentford. What I'm saying is this player is capable. His quality of pass, his ability to switch play, to hit the ball through the gap before it closes, or sometimes before it opens, that is, he is a truly elite passer. And the chemistry around him, you know, you mentioned that pass, the crossfield pass, and I laughed when you made that reference because I thought to myself, that's the kind of pass that his own teammates look at in awe and go, oh my God, we've got Christian Eriksen. You know, there's a, that's
you
the level.
You all of a realise that you've got Christian Eriksen on your football team and you're like, holy shit.
Right. We upgraded. If you'd said to Brentford at the start of the season, you're going to upgrade with a fully fit Christian Eriksen, they would have been like, oh my God. Like, imagine saying that to them straight after the Arsenal win. They'd have been like, oh my God, we're going to finish top eight. So shouts to them. What I love about Christian Eriksen as well, he's liberated the other players. So like Janelt, for example, like, scores, I think, twice. He'd scored twice previously in the previous 24 games, but now...
Good goals as well.
Yeah, allowing him to make the runs, allowing him to be braver, more progressive, and a different type of game for Brentford, because we've said this so often before, when a team stays up in the Premier League, they need to evolve.
Mm.
And the evolution's happening. They now get a full summer to train with Eriksen in the squad, hopefully if he can keep him on for a while.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing that was really interesting about this game is that Brentford, after really making teams work for it at the beginning of the season, slipped into this kind of run of form where teams didn't have to work quite as hard. And they had a bit of a run of games where they shipped quite a few goals. I think it was like Southampton. I mean, admittedly good sides. I think it was Southampton, Liverpool, and United in a run where they shipped 4-3-3. But then they conceded 4 to Everton in that FA Cup game as well. And you were looking at Brentford being like, are they going to be okay? Obviously, that was an FA Cup game, but in the Premier League. But in their last four games, they've won 3 and lost 2-1 narrowly to Brentford, to Leicester, sorry.
Mm.
But before that, they lost 2-0 at home to Newcastle. They were narrowly beaten by Arsenal 2-1 at the Emirates, although Arsenal, I think, should have put that game way out of sight. You know, they only lost to City 2-0 and they drew 0-0 with Palace.
Mm.
So they've almost become a little bit more like how Eriksen has liberated them in an attacking sense, in a creative sense. It's almost kind of given them a little bit more confidence defensively because they know that they will have opportunities to beat teams. They don't have to work quite as hard for chance creation anymore.
Mm.
Whereas before they were having to work super, super, super hard for chance creation.
Yes.
And you saw it in this game where they just like the possession breakdown, I think they had like 29% or something of the ball against a Chelsea side that can really, really hurt teams. As we know, they've got a huge array of attacking talent.
Mm.
That is such a football sentence, isn't it? A huge array of attacking talent.
Yeah.
And they just absorbed and like hit them on the break continuously. There was that one or two times where they were penned in on their own box and then all of a sudden they were charging down on Chelsea's box. The speed of the transition was lightning quick.
You know who'd love playing this team? Bruno Fernandes. Like,
oh, he'd love
because
it. Love it.
What it is, this is actually very much a Leicester type team as well. If you look, it's funny, even the breakdown of it, you look at what the front two did for Leicester. You had Vardy and Okazaki. Here you've got Ibiomo and Tony. So one finisher and one extreme hard worker who can also like link up play, finish. Then you have that quick release passing from the midfield. And you have that with Eriksen. You have that as a very particular type of player that enjoys playing frugally. We talk about Atleti a lot, but it's a very Atleti type of setup where,
yeah,
to me, where you can sit deep because you know that you have the quality of pass on the break, because it's all about the passing on the break. We saw some amazing counterattack actually this weekend, actually over at Napoli as well. We saw some amazing counterattack where the beauty of having a pass like Eriksen means you can play this game where you absorb so much pressure because you know that he can launch someone.
Yeah.
Like he's going to connect, and you can almost play this thing of like, it doesn't matter really what your pass completion is like too much because it's the crucial passes that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, all of the goals were lovely.
Yes, they really were. They were like, yeah, they were like training ground goals.
They were really, in fact, I think my favourite was probably Janelt's second goal.
His first was wild as well.
Yeah, oh but the second God, goal, yeah. The pass from Tony,
yes,
was so good. And that 10-minute spell for Brentford, they were absolutely unbelievable. Like, just unbelievable. And then they were fine after that. They just sat again, absorbed, and then that one at the end, which kind of came from a little bit from a Rudiger error.
Yes. He was under a lot of pressure. He looked more forced out of his rhythm than I've seen in a long time.
Mm. And another rare error, I think, from a Chelsea point of view was the decision-making of N'Golo Kante for Eriksen's goal. actually.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
If you look at Kante, he's kind of jockeying Eriksen and he's just covering that space in the middle. And he all of a sudden makes a decision to close the ball, whereas I actually think he probably would have done a better job just staying put and covering the centre off.
See, that's interesting.
As soon as he steps out, the pass is on.
That's interesting because that also speaks to underestimating Eriksen's goal scoring threat.
Yeah.
And a key part of Eriksen's return is the goals. This is the thing. He's not scoring garnish goals. Like he's scoring goals that matter. This is the really, really interesting thing about what he's done so far, his contribution. And he's got a nose for it. Mm. And it's funny because it takes me back, like going old school to like those days when everyone was raving about Christian Eriksen, Ajax, and Victor Fischer as well, to a lesser extent. And I was like, oh yeah, they're really that good. And I finally saw Eriksen at Ajax. And I was just like, this guy is going to...
Yeah, he's legit.
Yeah, like wherever he went, he would do what he's doing. So yeah, really, really happy for him and for Brentford in particular.
A quick shout out for Leeds 1, Southampton 1. We had an email from Nick Vasicek. Hope I've pronounced that right, Nick. Nick said, hey guys, the instant Kyle Walker-Peters went down on the corner of the box versus Leeds, we knew what was coming. James Ward-Prowse, top bin, it's done. On the replay though, I realised how inevitable it was. In the last replay, you can see an older Leeds fan shaking his finger towards the top corner and a very upset look on his face.
he
knew what was coming, just like we all did. That being said, what are the most inevitable other skills in world football? Trent Alexander-Arnold crosses. Thanks guys, and keep it up. Thanks, Nick.
I love that, and I love that question about what the most inevitable skills. I love that.
The most inevitable skills in football, we no longer see them, but it was the Iron Robin cut inside. You've seen him do this every single time, and when will defenders learn just to try and show him when he's right?
Can I name actually the most inevitable in football still? I think it's the Busquets no-look pass.
Interesting.
It's the Busquets no-look pass to play the ball 5 yards forward, and there's always the same look on the other midfielder's face going, how has he got me again? It's like, it's been 14 years. What are you doing?
Do you know what I think will be the most inevitable skill in years to come? And I think we saw a glimpse of it this weekend, and we'll talk about it. It's the Pedri sit-down.
Oh my God, yes. Okay. We're going to talk about this.
Save it, because we're going to talk about this later.
I think that
is my shout for being the next inevitable skill that we'll see in world football.
Idea for an advert: two players playing in like youth football all the way up, and like one is like Busquets or Pedri, and one's the other guy, and they played in the age of 6-7, and the same skill keeps getting them. Like, and then like they're old men playing in the park, and he's like 70, and he's the drag back is still working. It's been 65 years.
That's really interesting. When you said an advert, the first thing that came to my mind was IKEA. Pedri dribbling a football around an IKEA. Every time he sits someone down, there's an IKEA chair there, and as they sit down, it pings up with the model and the price.
Oh my God, that's so...
And he could just go around the whole of IKEA.
Do you know why that's so amazing? Because Pedri absolutely shops in IKEA for himself. And yeah, of course he does. Of course he does. Oh, Pedri, could you just pick up some stuff? Oh, of course. You know, he's so busy. Pedri is like... doing tasks. The thing I love about Pedri is
if you give Pedri loves flat pack furniture.
Of course, Pedri loves tasks. He just loves tasks. He's the tasks
Dude,
guy.
He played about 800 games last year. Do you think he has time to put any flat pack furniture together?
Of course he does.
Maybe that's actually why he looks so exhausted in the Olympics, because he put together about 9 Kallaxes before he'd had...
there's an amazing photo of Pedri and Gavi together, which I saw, and it sums him up so well. Someone said, what I love about Gavi is that he comes on the pitch and he's looking for the ball and looking for a fight. And this picture is incredible, Ryan. I'll send it to you afterwards. It's like, it's a picture of Pedri and Gavi's eyes. Gavi is playing for Spain.
He's a naughty young man. Gavi
is looking for a fight. Yep. And Pedri's eyes are looking for more tasks. It's like, it's perfect.
Oh, incredible. Yeah, we'll talk about that Pedri goal a little bit later.
But yeah, it's amazing.
Elsewhere in the Premier League, big shout to Spurs. Spurs were so good in the second half of this game, beating Newcastle 5-1. Mm. After being a goal down.
That is Conte intensity.
They're looking good. No side in the Premier League has scored more goals since the turn of the year, I believe.
And all of Conte's chat about trying to like whip things up, it's just, maybe that's just part of the process.
Telling everyone how shit his squad was.
But we never believed that. Yeah, we never believed
that. We liked Kulusevski and Bentancur as signings.
Loved them.
This top four running is going to be really interesting, because that Chelsea result has kind of really thrown it into a little bit of a...
I was going to say, Chelsea had no guarantees. No guarantees.
West Ham beating Everton 2-1 on Sunday. And it's as you were at the top, Liverpool beating Watford 2-0 on Saturday, Manchester City beating Burnley 2-0. It's Manchester City Liverpool next week. They're separated by a point at the Etihad, just like they were this time, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago when they played in the same fixture.
Wow. Small game.
I'm so hyped about that game. Shouts to Wolves beating Villa 2-1. Villa a little bit up and down at the moment. Manchester United won, Leicester won.
Mm. Absolutely fair. I think Manchester United just couldn't really execute. And if anything, Leicester were good value for a win, if they got the win.
Yeah, that goal got disallowed, and I think rightly so. At first, I couldn't figure out what had happened. Mm. And then on the replay, I was just like, oh yeah.
I'm just happy for James Maddison in general because he's being decisive again. He struggled for a while. Back fit. Goal. Yeah.
Quickly before we go to the continent, let's shout out the Old Firm Derby because Celtic getting the better of Rangers at Ibrox this weekend, winning 2-1 to extend their lead at the top to 6 points.
Wild start too.
The beginning of this game was absolute carnage. I mean, it's an Old Firm Derby. What do you expect? It's just like, you knew what this was.
Yes.
Aaron Ramsey opening the scoring.
Very nice finish. Very Rakitic style run. Goes into space.
Rogic equalising for Celtic after 7 minutes. And then Carter Vickers 2 minutes before half time. I know we don't cover Scottish football a huge amount on this show, but anyone in the world who doesn't watch the Old Firm Derby, make sure you do every time it's on.
You're missing out. Yeah.
It is an absolute must watch fixture. And actually, it's still on my bucket list for games to go to, Old Firm Derby.
Just the atmosphere, right?
Oh, it's so loud. It's so loud. You just can't hear the commentary for a lot of it. It's so, so loud.
Mm.
But yeah, after Rangers winning the title last season, it looks like it's Celtics to lose now. 6 points, that's a lot to overhaul with just, what, a few games remaining now. Shall we take a quick break?
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on one suite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer.
This episode is brought to you by hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
All right, where do you want to begin? Derby d'Italia?
We have to, I suppose.
This whole game boiled down to 8.5 minutes, really?
Well, I think the first half.
Put it this way, what I mean by that is that 8.5 minutes, so good, and barely a ball was kicked.
Oh God.
From the moment that the penalty is awarded on, Dumfries going into the box and VAR, he got taken down. It went to VAR. Did you think it was a penalty?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I did as well.
Yeah.
On the commentary I was watching, they couldn't seem to make up their mind, which was interesting. Çalhanoğlu walks up to take the penalty, saved by Szczęsny.
Not the best penalty, I have to say. Not the best penalty, but still a very good save, I would say. So when the goal goes in, it's deflection. It comes...
Comes back out.
Çalhanoğlu goes in for it. One of the Juventus defenders gets there first and it cans off another into the top corner.
And I think there's a Juve defender who goes down but they've been taken out by one of their own players.
Right. So I thought, it's an own goal. I'm like, this is an own goal. Yeah. And it gets pulled back for encroaching.
Well, no. What happens before that is that the referee awards a foul, a free kick to Juve.
Yes.
Szczęsny is off,
right,
kicking the hoardings, giving it the fucking... Come on. And then
play acting.
there are so many people around the ref for so long. Everyone's angry, everyone's pushing, so many hand gestures. And then it goes to VAR again, and there is a Juve player encroaching. Correct decision, right? But to be honest, it didn't need to be retaken. It should have just been given as a goal.
Right, exactly. I haven't seen that many people, and you pointed this out, I think. I haven't seen that many people this angry in football since Messi won his last Ballon d'Or. But yeah, people were so angry. And I saw this and I just thought that to me was just a goal. Like, why don't you just allow that as an own goal? Like, that's a Juventus own goal to me. And it would have been completely in keeping with the chaotic nature of that first half.
Yeah. Chiellini hitting. I mean, just to wrap up on that, Calhanoglu then puts the penalty the same way.
And rips it. Here's the thing.
He hits it better second time round. He's like, he got his eye in the first time.
Hypersonic speed. You know what it reminded me of? Reminded me of Sadio Mane in the AFCON final.
Mm.
First penalty, second penalty. First penalty didn't have the intensity. Second one was like hypersonic, like gone. Ripped it right into the bottom corner pocket, the left-hand pocket of the net. But so in terms of this first half, just wild. Like, as you say, Chiellini somehow scooping out the ball from under the intercross bar.
I'd say at best, it was 45 centimetres out.
I think he got a very late sight of it.
I'm not blaming Chiellini at all. It was just one of those like freak ricochets off him.
And how is this
somehow
in the bar?
Hits the bar. Right. It's kind of like, what the hell?
How has that not gone in? Yeah, exactly. Juventus starting extremely well.
Having now watched that first episode of Moon Knight though, I do have a theory.
What's that?
Maybe it's just like, no.
Out of body
experience. Doing?
You cannot. You
leave this
you
to
fool,
us.
You fool. So, watching Juventus in this half, one thing that really stuck out to me was Dusan Vlahovic's stage presence, whatever you call it, is unbelievable. The ability of this man to dominate the entire back line. Like, him and Morata aren't that difficult in physical stature, but the way that Dusan Vlahovic moves, there's a golden age for Serie A number nines. You have Osimhen, you have Tammy Abraham to a slightly lesser extent, and Vlahovic was kind of the peak of that, but these number nines that can literally just go solo against two or three centre backs and have them legitimately stressed out. It's unreal.
Yeah, I mean, the early signs of that Vlahovic signing are so good. And the thing that I really like about Vlahovic is that he seems to have just taken to this team straight away. Like, he's giving it to teammates giving shit to teammates when he knows that he's an option and they don't give it. Like, he absolutely berated Dybala for one during this game.
Yeah.
And with, obviously, it looks like Dybala will go in the summer, and then it's going to kind of be Vlahovic's front line.
Can I say this as well? It looks like it's also going to be Zakaria's midfield.
Oh my God, when he hit the post.
There is a dummy that this man put on Skriniar. Skriniar is not a clown.
No.
Skriniar is not a clown. He made this man spin in a spin cycle. The dummy he put on Skriniar is absolutely sensational. Surges through the midfield.
It was like he took him to the fairground, stuck him in the teacups, and stood there waving at him as he was going round and round and round. It's like, did you have fun? Skriniar's just like, no, not really. I didn't really have a good time.
Watching the highlights of the game the next day, you'd be like, oh, that's where he got to.
Zakaria's there filming him. You have fun? Wave.
Oh yeah, there's two very good signings for Juventus. But Juve doing that thing again where it's like, how have they got these players uncontested?
I know. Well, to be honest, I think the €75 million fee for Vlahovic was a big part of that.
That's interesting.
I think with Zakaria.
The injuries.
Yeah, maybe. And also just his contract was up as well at the end of the season, wasn't it? So I think it was just a let's go kind of thing. Let's move on this.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
Anyway, Inter won the game. Favourite moment of this? Seeing the 53rd minute clock up at the end of the first half. Oh, what a sight. What a sight. I love that.
That Super Bowl.
That was a really important win for Inter, by the way, in the race for top four. Well, not so much the top four, but the top three / title race, because they were only a point ahead of Juve at that point. They're now 4 points in front.
game in hand on Napoli, who beat Atalanta. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a sec. Superior goal difference and 3 points behind. And they're just 3 points behind Milan as well at the top. It's still tight, man. I don't think it's...
Very tight.
And then you've got on the outside lurking, waiting for someone to give it a little bit of Prosecco to pounce. You got Roma only 5 points behind Juve.
Don't start. Do you know, actually, can I say this about very quickly on Napoli's win over Atalanta, one of their most impressive wins of the season.
AKA
listen,
the Derby della Aguangua.
Now listen, all my interests, all my vitamins. That's amazing.
Yeah, Napoli-Atalanta is the Derby della Aguangua.
It's my happy place. So look, the thing about this win for Napoli, it's one of the most impressive wins of the season. They did it without Victor Osimhen, who'd been on World Cup qualifier duty. And they did it with, you know, I said this before, if Napoli have to trust the supporting cast to get it done, and they got it done. And that, you know, the symbol of that was Lozano and Elmas breaking late on. But the beauty of this game was it really felt like a kind of passing of the torch, because you had Insigne running things at the start with his early penalty and then his assist as well, a gorgeous goal by Politano, who's got like one of the best strikes in the game. And just really impressive to put Atalanta away, because one criticism I've had of Napoli this year and many others have had is that this is the inability to win the games against sort of other contenders. We saw them lose 1-0 to Milan, which could still be a decisive result, but I was really impressed by their resilience here and their ability to absorb pressure for, you know, sustained periods against Atalanta, who really went at them. So yeah, shout out to Napoli for a great win.
Absolutely.
One thing as well, one other thing in Serie A I want to mention as well, Nico Gonzalez getting the goal for Fiorentina. They won 0-1 over Empoli, because I'm looking at Argentina's squad in terms of who can give Messi attacking support in that World Cup. And he is someone that really will show up, I think. Very hardworking, decisive finisher, someone worth taking a look at. It's funny because I was having a look at his profile over the weekend, and then he scores the winner against Empoli, and I was like, ah, that's an interesting footballer to watch.
That is an interesting footballer.
No higher accolade.
Look at the analysis in that, everyone.
Listen, world class.
Do you know what I think, everyone? I think that is an interesting footballer.
Can I just say my favourite piece of football commentary is still Barry Davies. When he's like, interesting,
very interesting. You know what's interesting, very interesting?
What's that?
La Liga's top four.
Oh my goodness.
Second, third and fourth are now all on 57 points. Barcelona beating Sevilla Sunday night after Atleti had beaten Alaves 4-1 on Saturday. João Felix with two goals, and he's playing extremely well at the moment.
He's in his bag, as the kids would say.
He is very much in his bag. And Karim Benzema, two penalties, gave Real Madrid a 2-1 win away at Celta Vigo. But yes, Sunday night, this was a really good game, I thought. Barcelona against Sevilla.
Yes, really good.
It was a really fun game. It was absolutely valid to say Barcelona were back in the Clásico. But I think this was almost like cemented it in a weird way.
Yeah, very fair.
Because this is a good Sevilla side.
Yes, and very good.
The way that Barcelona moved the ball around, I was like, this looks like 2015, 2016.
2015 is the perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the vibe. It's a tight win. It's a narrow win, but it was won by an absolute wonder goal. Pedri's goal could have been a messy winner against Sevilla in 2015-16.
On this Barcelona game, and I share your thoughts on this, I love the 2015 analogy, because the thing about 2011 Barca, peak Pep, was that it was all about match control. And 2015 sacrificed a little bit of match control for directness. And actually,
if you look at the possession breakdown, 55% against 45% for Sevilla.
I love that. And what was so striking about this game was there was two things in particular. First, I mean, obviously, Ousmane Dembele was
supernatural. He's so well at the moment.
Supernatural.
So well. I hope he stays.
I really hope he stays. The other thing that was really striking, the quality of the pressing by Aubameyang. To the point where I started expressing concern at my laptop when I was watching on DAZN. I was watching going Sevilla playing out from the back, and I was literally thinking, oh, you don't want to try that. Like, I was expressing polite concern for their safety.
You looked at the screen and was like, who's that pressing? And it just went all Kenneth Branagh in Dunkirk.
Yes, sir.
Musa put his binoculars on and someone just said, what can you see? And he just got emotional and went, Aubameyang. Musa emotional at the Aubameyang press.
It was absolutely, the Aubameyang press actually was
Oba.
A sign.
Oba.
My beautiful, you know
how he says home.
Home.
It's so close. What is Oba?
The press. It was this thing, but that is the symbol of what Xavi has done to this Barcelona team. The ability of Dembele, it's the decision-making as well. It's not just the beating the men, it's the decision-making, Ryan. And the only thing with this game is
He looks a different player, man.
He does. And the thing about this game is Barcelona fans may be a bit concerned about some of the finishing by Ferran Torres. And I've said this before, the goals are going to come because he's doing everything else. The performance that he put in, and this thing I love about what Xavi's doing, it's not just the starting team, but it's the subs that he makes.
Mm.
Knowing when to bring in Gavi, not only to pick fights, but when to like retain control, match control.
Yeah, it was a great sub.
Really great. And just so many elements of this game. Like it really is just the finishing with Barcelona. This could easily have been 3-0. It should have been, actually.
XG was like 2.22.
Yeah, so, it feels about right. Yeah, it feels about right. Yeah.
But they really should have scored more. And one of my favorite moments in this game was Gerard Pique nicking the ball back almost like an advanced. Gerard Pique basically channeling his Dennis Zakaria, won the ball back just outside Sevilla box and then hitting a long shot for the corner. I was just like, put him in midfield. One of my genuine wishes before this man retires is to see him. I don't want to sound like I'm throwing shade at MLS, so please, but it would only really work in that kind of league because it would be one of the only leagues that would give Gerard Pique the
top
leeway.
Launch. Yes, exactly.
Gerard Pique winning the ball back and just going on a run and passing to absolutely nobody. I want to see Chicharito screaming at him for LA Galaxy and being like, Gerard, and Pique's just wagging his finger as he's doing stepovers. And then and then just pings one top corner. That's what I want to see. I want to see Gerard Pique total football.
But he's absolutely, have you seen him play futsal? You've seen him play futsal.
Like, I have, yeah.
And
he's amazing.
He's brilliant. Yeah, yeah. He loves it. And he gets really excited when he's allowed to go forward. You're like, yeah. But
we need to talk about the goal.
We do because Pedri did it again. Now, okay, here's the thing about that goal. So it was absolutely astonishing. And it's very symbolic, the first dummy. So he gets the ball into the box from Dembele. Beautiful ball, cut back. This gorgeous diagonal, cuts it back, just across and just, you know, the kind of pass that I would say sets the table. So Dembele finding Pedri in so much space. Their understanding, their dynamic, their dynamism, their chemistry is amazing. He receives the ball, I would say 25 yards out and steps forward, maybe a yard. And it's very symbolic that the first player that Pedri passes with the dummy is Rakitic. He just sells this gorgeous dummy, shapes the shoot, cuts it back. And the second dummy is so good, it fools the actual commentator. That is what I love so much about it. He's like, shapes the shoot, looking for space. He's going to shoot. No, he dummies everyone. Second dummy shifts onto the right foot and then hammers the diagonal. It's like a Lothar Matthäus type finish, right to left, bottom left-hand corner. And there was talk, someone wrote to me afterwards and goes, this is instinct from Pedri. I said, no, it's not, actually. Pedri broke that space open deliberately. He knew exactly what he was doing. He did it against Galatasaray. It's the same kind of finish. When he cuts in, I think Ferran Torres plays him against Galatasaray and he's in the box and he dummies it twice because he goes across the box and back across the keeper. Like, he knows what he's doing. It's not
100%.
You don't watch Pedri and think, you know, there's a limited number of players, we've said, in world football who can run at a defence and improvise.
Mm.
There's also a limited number that can run at a defence and dismantle it on the fly and be like, I'm looking for this particular gap. There is no way in hell that Pedri was going to shoot after the first dummy. He was like, the angle's not wide enough. He was too central. He's like, if I shoot from here, the keeper's going to get across to it. I have to go wider and come back. And that was like, he'd planned that almost in the moment he took possession. That's why he is the elite. Like, we talk about players whose peak is nowhere in sight. Pedri is absolutely one of those few players.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I cannot think of the words to describe fully how much I love this footballer. I just can't. And the thing is, without doing the kind of like, we said it, like, it was so apparent. The moment he stepped on the Barcelona pitch for the first time, I was just like, whoa, this kid's good. And we've seen many, many, many footballers step onto the scene and be like, wow, these kids are good. But you're always never too sure. And there has always been something about Pedri that just is like so legit, it's almost inevitable. It's just inevitable. For someone so diminutive. He's a footballing giant.
It's just his presence. It's
there
wild.
Are a few players where it feels like a genuine honor to watch their journey
in real time. Yeah,
in real time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and if you're using Barcelona as an example, it happened with Iniesta. It happened with Xavi. It happened with Messi. And I think you're seeing a similar thing with Gavi. But I think Gavi is these two. I was thinking about this. These two are going to have the Pacino De Niro treatment, the Iniesta Xavi treatment for their whole career if they stay together.
They will. Yeah.
You know, it's going to be impossible to refer to one without the other. And to be honest, I don't think either of them will actually hate that, because one of the beauties of those kind of situations is that it removes the individual pressure on both.
Yes.
You know, if there had been no Iniesta, the pressure on Xavi would have almost, I think, been too great, and vice versa.
But the outrageous thing is they're better than Xavi. I can't believe I'm saying this.
Yeah, they're better than Xavi and Iniesta were at that age.
And I can't believe I'm saying this.
But do you know what? That's one of the coolest takes I've ever heard you say.
This is a horrible analogy, and I hesitate to say it, but I feel I have to say it. You know, like there's a speed that toddlers have when you stop watching them. Like, so if you have a toddler next to you and you stop watching them for a split second, they'll be literally
gone.
Out of the door.
Yeah, I have no idea how to do it.
They'll be half up the drive. When Gavi played against Italy in the Nations League, there was a moment when Tchouaméni stopped watching Gavi, right? He just looked away for a split second and he was gone. You saw the panic.
Honestly, it's really funny you said this, because I visited my cousin a couple of weeks ago and she's got a one-year-old who's just learned how to crawl.
Yeah.
My God. My God.
Speed. What's so funny about Gavi and Pedri is that, you know, like so often with siblings who are really close, there's like one that's naughty and one's the enabler. There's the well-behaved one, but actually loves hearing all the stories. Oh, like Pedri, like, that's, you know, buttered milk. He's like, oh, Gavi, what did he get up to? But Pedri's like the model student, and Gavi's like the naughty, scrappy one who's always got dirty clothes.
Pedri's already talking about how, you know, pleased he is that Gavi's getting a run in the side, and that, you know, how much potential he's got. And I'm like, bro, you're 19.
Yes, Sally.
You're 19.
But we're so lucky, I think, in this time of like, there's a lot going on, right? But we're really lucky to have those 90 minutes where we can just watch Gavi and Pedri and just kind of go to a different place. I'm really grateful. And I've said this before with Barca, like Xavi's Barca, like they really are a kind of, rather like, you know, Firmini. And this is what I love that Xavi paid tribute to Firmini, Barca Firmini, and really saying like, they've carried the spirit of the club.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's great to see the women's team and the men's team both playing. And screw what's happening in the league to Barca men. It's really great to see these two teams playing with identity again.
Well, you say screws what's happening to Barca men. They're second in the league. They're second in the league.
And but for a couple of Real results that could have gone the other way, should have gone the other way, they'd be even closer. I mean,
but they win their, do you know what? They win their game in hand. They're 9 points behind Real.
It's incredible that this is even a conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Quickly, just going to the women's Primera. Barcelona beating Villarreal 6-1. However, Villarreal were 1-0 up after 12 minutes thanks to Salma Paraluelo's unbelievable goal, where she kind of does this little, like, not Cruyff turn, but kind of like drag back flick through the legs, does two Barcelona defenders, and then pings it in the top corner from however long, however far out.
Reminded me of the Wiedemeyer goal. Joel Wiedemeyer for Wolfsburg against Eintracht Frankfurt last year.
Yes.
Similar.
Oh, like, yeah. But yeah. Like from the, it was like a mirror it, from the opposite.
Yeah,
side.
It was exactly the way the ball moves in the air. The ball is basically like, it changes, it moves about what, like five, how many feet?
God. My God. It was just amazing. Like I can't remember who it was, but there's a Villarreal player who stood in the box just with their hands on the head. She's just like, what the hell have I just seen?
One of my favorite things is player reactions, yeah.
Shout out to Ahmed Schubel, who responded. I posted the video on Twitter on Saturday, and he just responded saying, as soon as I saw the gloves, I knew there'd be a madness. And so I can't remember who responded, but someone just replied to him just saying, you know, ball.
I love that so much. Hey, Armour's a great writer as well. Great writer.
Armour's a great writer, covers Bournemouth for The Athletic. However, oh dear. The joys of being able to bring on Claudia Pino at halftime.
Goodness.
3 minutes later, she's got two and she's put Barcelona back in front. Less than 20 minutes after she's come on at halftime, she's got a hat trick. Barcelona ended up winning the game 6-1. Miles out. Obviously, they've already clinched the league. Just quickly, though, in France, PSG drew with Paris in the Paris derby. And Lyon won to extend their lead at the top. Quickly, Frauen Bundesliga, there was a top of the table clash. Bayern still heavily hit by injuries and COVID. Lost 6-0 to Wolfsburg in Wolfsburg. But did okay for like the first, 20 minutes, half an hour?
Ah, charitable. Do you know what it is? I think the problem with this was they did okay. Yes, absolutely. They carved some decent opportunities. But the problem here is, and we have to, I'm glad we've mentioned this in brief and not really gone in on it, because I think that does justice to COVID injuries and fatigue. It's not just the fact that Bayern had players missing through COVID and injury. It's that even the players they brought back had to carry an unusual burden just because the squad is stretched. They pushed PSG really far in the Champions League in a tie they should have won.
That took a lot. And they went to extra time as well in that
they
game,
looked tired,
yeah.
Ryan. They looked
extremely tired, yeah.
The problem is with this Wolfsburg team as well, there were six different scorers, which is a big problem for Barcelona who faced them in Champions League, because this team can hurt you from many places.
Mm.
Sven Yehut was outstanding. Again, Vasmith got a gorgeous goal. Jill Roord is very difficult to pick up in that hole. And then Oberdorf and Pop in that sort of midfield access is just so brutal. Like the match control that they both scored, and they both enjoyed like just the dominance there. And a Bayern midfield that had looked really strong against PSG was just absolutely overwhelmed time again.
I mean, Wolfsburg are good, man.
They're really good. But I want to say one quick shout here for Jon Stottir on the flank. This is an elite. I think she's 20. So next year, they're going to have Jon Stottir on one flank and Brandt on the other, Wolfsburg. Those are two of the best young attackers in world football. Brandt is the only player I've seen really rattle Barcelona in an attacking sense, the Champions League, in terms of her movement. And Jon Stottir, just the footwork, just an unbelievable footballer, speed, directness, technical ability. So yeah, but Wolfsburg, very good value for that win, and that looks like
4 points clear, 3 games left. They should close that out.
Yeah.
Bayern obviously second, and Turbina Potsdam third. It'd be amazing to see Turbina Potsdam back in the Champions League, one of the German giants in women's football. In the men's Bundesliga, the stadiums were full. The ultras were back for the first time since before the pandemic. Ultras were back in the stadiums in the Bundesliga. It was all a little bit too much for some people. Domenico Tedesco after the game said, this was quite strange for the Dortmund players. Even many Dortmund players haven't experienced an atmosphere like this in the stadium before.
That's interesting.
Leipzig beating Dortmund 4-1 at the Westfalenstadion. Dortmund were good at the beginning. Actually, they should have been ahead, basically. They broke a couple of times, had a couple of chances, should have taken the lead, a couple of unforced errors. Leipzig capitalise on them, get two goals in front, and then just tactically did really, really well to see the game out and put another couple of goals past Dortmund in the second half. Big win for Leipzig, that, because Freiburg losing to Bayern, they've got a 3-point gap now on Freiburg for that final Champions League spot. Bayern, by the way, who for 17 seconds had 12 players on the pitch.
Absolutely wild.
Because Kingsley Coman's old squad number went up instead of his new one, and so he didn't leave the field. And then they realised after 17 seconds or so, and they were like, oh shit, we've got 12 players on the pitch.
It's a conspiracy.
Bayern were already 3-1 up. Christian Streich after the game was kind of like, that's one for the authorities, not for me.
Yeah. I love Christian Streich. Can I say this as well? There's one note in Bayern that's extremely important that I haven't seen covered in mainstream media, and I'm disappointed because the mainstream's not picking up on this again. The fact that Gnabry and Sané both have afros is extremely interesting, because when's the last time we had two elite wingers both froed up like that? Afro Gnabry, I'm a big fan. Afro Gnabry, yeah. Afro Sané, big fan of that.
I just want Leroy Sané to really, really try and grow a proper mustache. He needs to do it properly. Because then you'd have two afroed wingers with mustaches.
Full 1970s, exactly. Ha! Walk on the pitch to like Isaac Hayes, Truck Turner.
Disco Bayern, man.
Disco Bayern. Have a disco ball above the Allianz.
Yeah, get rid of the spider cam, or put the spider cam in the disco ball.
Disco ball.
Oh my god.
Wearing flared shorts next season.
I think they now have like the can-can music when they score as the goal music at Bayern. But I, from next season, I want the spider cam in a disco ball. And if Bayern score, I just want the OJs to come out. But, whoa, 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 whoa. I love Bayern. That's the goal music. That should be it. I want it. Obviously, any player with a mustache instantly becomes at least 17% better. Absolutely true attributes.
It's facts.
They should have that on FIFA as a FIFA unlock code.
It should.
You can put a mustache on your player and it gives them an attribute boost.
The stats, yeah.
EA Sports, I'm available for consultation if you would like. Any ideas on gameplay
and
tweaks?
I'm available for free merch. Yes.
Yeah, we are. Do we need to cover anything else today? Have we covered everything?
I think we're good. We're good.
I felt fun. Felt fun and breezy.
Lots of fun, yeah.
Don't forget, we'll cover all of the Champions League games on Thursday. Wrighty's House on Wednesday, but we're recording Tuesday, so it'll be Palace against Arsenal. Some flowers for a couple of players and some other bits on Wrighty's House. But it'll go up Wednesday. Other than that, we hope everyone's staying safe, staying well, hanging in there.
Get that vax if you can, get that boost if you can.
Don't forget to check the Stadio Outros playlist on Spotify. Speaking of which, playing out on Lady Pimp by Solitary Dancer. Trying to think if there's anything else to shout out, Musa. Is there anything else to shout out?
No, we're all good, I think.
Are you sure?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you written any books recently? Have you got
No books recently. No. Nothing to declare.
You sure you don't want to add anything?
No, nothing to add.
Are you sure?
Yes, absolutely.
Nothing?
Nothing at all.
Wow.
Incitement. You're trying to get me to drop a hot take. I'm not doing anything.
What a loser. All right then, everyone. much love. We'll be back on Thursday.
See you then.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, Start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.